The following is a class given by His Holiness Sri Rompar Swami on Sri Shikshastakam, verse 3, part 2, recorded on 24th May 2008 in Gitanagari, United States.
Okay, so here's our theme again. The third verse of Shikshastakam. And Srila Prabhupada is going to summarize for us what this verse is instructing. He's instructing that this verse is giving us the symptoms of one who chants the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra without offense, as follows. Although he is very exalted, he thinks himself lower than the grass on the ground. We discussed Maharaj Prataparudra. We're going to discuss more this evening on humility. The natural humility of a Vaishnava. Like a tree, he tolerates everything in two ways. When a tree is cut down, it does not protest. That's not it, Rati. That's not it.
This was the only one you
said. No, that's not the only one. That's not it.
It was on the small.
It's not it. What's that? Okay. I said it's a yellow pad. On top of the yellow pad, or some legal pad, there are two sheets of paper printed. Two sheets of paper printed. This is printed. This is more than two sheets. Two sheets of paper printed.
Sorry.
Just now coming. Okay. I knew it would happen. When a tree, like a tree, he tolerates everything. When a tree is cut down, it does not protest. And even when drying up, does not ask anyone for water. There's one devotee whose name I'm not going to mention, but he said, if I ever have to take birth again, I just pray that I don't come back as a plant in a Hare Krishna temple. Fill in the blank. The tree delivers its fruits, flowers, and whatever else it possesses to anyone and everyone. So the tree is simply serving without consideration. Someone wants its fruits, take my fruits. Someone wants the branches, take the branches. Someone wants the trunk, take the trunk. It tolerates scorching heat, torrents of rain. Sometimes it's nice in the summer, but very hot. And even if it's very hot, it still gives shade to others and berries and shelter for the birds in the winter season. A devotee engaged in chanting the holy name of the Lord practices forbearance like that of a tree. Even if rebuked or chastised, he does not say anything to retaliate to others. Every time this subject is mentioned, There's invariable questions, so I'll answer the question before it gets asked. But Maharaj, what if? Should we just stand there if someone's making some false accusation and just remain silent? That's what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did in the case of Ramchandra Puri. We know this story from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Ramchandra Puri's business, his thing, was finding faults in devotees. He would go from place to place and see where he could find some faults in the devotees. And he was expert. And even when there wasn't faults, he would find faults. So Mahaprabhu was faultless. So he criticized him. He fed him and fed him and fed him and fed him because he was the godbrother of his spiritual master, Ishwara Puri, that he treated him like a spiritual master. So when his spiritual master's godbrother said, eat more, eat more, eat more, eat more, he ate more. And then he faulted him. Aha! You're eating more than a sannyasi should eat. How can you maintain your vows of renunciation? I've heard that you and your followers eat too much. Now I've seen it. Aha! So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu cut his eating in half. And everyone cut their eating in half and pleaded with Mahaprabhu, this man is just a fault finder. We want to give you normal amount. Lord Chaitanya said, no, he's right. A sannyasi should be very strict. So then he faulted Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for eating too less. That's bad grammar, but that's how you say it in India, so. Should be too little. Right? Then one day, Ramchandra Puri came to visit the ashram of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Gundicha, and he saw some ants moving about the floor and said, aha! You've been eating sweets privately. Just see how many ants are moving around on the floor. There must be because you're eating sweets. I'm going to go tell everybody you've been eating sweets, so-called sannyasi. And Mahaprabhu just tolerated. Now, if one is going to say something, this is preempting the question, let it not come from retaliation, let it come from service to Krishna. And service to Krishna, if you'd like, there's some explanation here, and one is detached and neutral. But if one does speak something, it's not in retaliation mood, is the message. A Vaishnava should not ask anything from anyone else. Of course, we do ask people for some service to Krishna, but it means for oneself. This is the platform of Madhavendra Puri. He didn't, in the vow of sannyas, there's the kutichak bahudak, Paribrajakacharya and Paramahamsa. This is the description of the Paramahamsa stage. That's not for most of us, by the way, in case you didn't catch it. Madhavendra Puri didn't eat unless somebody came. The Paribrajakacharya is one will go here and there, no fixed residence, and if they go to some place and someone offers something, they will extend their cloth and something, madhukari, whatever is offered. But the Paramahamsa state, they don't ask. If someone offers, they'll accept. But if no one offers, so Madhavendra Puri sometimes would fast for days. In America you die because people don't have the sense of being charitable to renunciates. If someone gives him something without being asked, he should accept it. Especially if it's Krishna bringing you a pot of milk. But if nothing comes, a Vaishnava should be satisfied to eat whatever vegetables and fruits are easily available. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because of the simplicity of Thakur Haridas, he would come from visiting the Jagannath Puri temple, he would receive alms from the pujaris and he would bring those alms and deliver them to Haridas. One time Haridas couldn't accept because he hadn't finished his chanting. Because he was becoming so old and infirm, he couldn't complete his chanting. So then he had this request that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would come and see him and he could fix his eyes completely upon the personality of Godhead, as just like Bhishma Dev at will, Haridas gave up his body. Hearing and chanting the holy name and seeing the beautiful face of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In the course of passing life, he does not give anxiety to others, but rather does good to them while forgetting about his own happiness. How much difficulty Srila Prabhupada underwent to arrange for printing of literature for people who didn't want it. At least they thought they didn't want it. But that didn't stop him because he knew that they did want it. Or on the soul platform, they were very much feeling the pain of separation from Krishna. So he took so much trouble in the heat of the Delhi summers with no money and was to borrow money and ask the printer to give him printing on credit. By the way, printers don't do that even in America with the Speak of India. But the printers were so much appreciating Prabhupada's dedication and devotion, they would sometimes do like that. Practicing forgiveness like that of a tree and giving up violence towards other living beings, he protects and maintains them. Just as Srila Prabhupada did pictured here in presenting Krishna consciousness to Western young people and the most unnormal, unsuitable conditions for a renunciate, Prabhupada sat himself down right in the midst of them and practiced real nonviolence, the giving of the holy name of Krishna and love for Krishna, and simply envisioning how to do this more and more. Although a Vaishnava is the most exalted person, he is prideless and gives all respect to everyone, knowing everyone else to be the resting place of Krishna. These are Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's words in Antyalila of Srimad Bhagavatam or Chaitanya Charitamrita. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. And finally, Lord Chaitanya said, if one chants the holy name of Lord Krishna in this manner, he will certainly awaken his dormant love for Krishna's lotus feet and go back home, back to Godhead, passing right past those little astronaut machines there. Right through the coverings of the universe into the spiritual sky and back home, back to Godhead with a Sikha flying behind him. Zoom, zoom, off we go. Hare Krishna, Hare
Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare.
So we can turn the lights back on and this machine can go off. We're going to spend some time now discussing humility. There's four. Humility, tolerance, trinabhati sudhiche na taror evasahi shuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahati. So these four. We'll cover something of the first two this evening. How can the conclusion of verse 2 is how to develop a taste or an attraction for chanting of the holy name of the Lord? How to go more deeply into our chanting of the holy name of the Lord? How to develop a deep relationship with Krishna in the form of His holy name? So Lord Chaitanya's teaching is through humility. So, how to develop and increase our humility. And the instruction Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives us is through the medium of service to the Vaishnavas. When Satyaraj Khan, one of the residents of Kulinagram, was along with other householders asking Lord Chaitanya, what is our duty as householders? We don't know what we should be doing and how to reach the fulfillment of our duties as householders. Lord Chaitanya gave these two instructions. Always chant the holy name of the Lord as far as possible, and to serve. Thank you. Thank you very much. Sorry to put you through the trouble. To serve the devotees whenever possible. Through the medium of service to the devotees, if done in the right spirit, not mechanically, not begrudgingly, not mindlessly, but being present with the fact, just as the nice instruction was given, Krishna is present within, and within that soul that Krishna is present within, there's this unique attraction for Krishna, or at least something of an attraction for Krishna in the heart of that soul, who is the, within his heart is Krishna. So by serving the devotee, this quality of humility increases. In his Bhakti Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami gives a very nice metaphor. Listen carefully. Metaphor is that humility is like the eyelid. The eyelid gives protection to the eye. So some object comes to harm the eye, the eyelid closes just by reflex. It gives protection to the eye. So, similarly, humility protects the devotee from offenses. If we're in a humble mood, serving the devotees, and out there in the universe of the world of devotees, something starts coming our way from that universe of devotees that says, uh-oh, why are they doing this? But the, just like Ambarish Maharaj, he maintained, even Durvas Muni was ready to kill him for nothing. Innocent, nothing. Breaking the fast without breaking the fast. Because he's, you know, got the Durvas Muni Bhav, he lost it. Ready to kill Ambarish Maharaj. He was protected by his humility. Similarly, Jiva Goswami is stating this in Bhakti Sandarbha. When we serve devotees or chant without offense, this natural humility protects us from offenses in the chanting of the holy name. It protects us from offending the devotees. It protects our devotional creeper. And that humble devotee feels Krishna is protecting us, or protecting me, or protecting us. Now, when we're feeling protected by Krishna, it doesn't mean, it's another one of those questions. It means, you know, if a Mack truck is coming your way, Maharaj, you just stand in the way thinking Krishna will protect me. We take practical measures. We don't stand in the way of Mack trucks to begin with. But if some freak of nature happens, some unexpected event of nature happens, we take necessary steps. Yes. But we should feel ourselves protected by Krishna. How many stories have you heard where the devotees described this and that and the other circumstance where they felt Krishna, I mean, cars tumbling upside down and rolling over and over a ravine and doop-a-doop-a-doop, and they, nothing happened. Protected. In so many circumstances of so we want, a devotee wants humility to manifest in the heart. In that humble state, we can call out for Krishna. And seeing that pure landing place, the heart, Krishna comes, the pure holy name comes. But it's an exercise in our chanting and in our practical activities that we want this mood of humility. That's the effort from our side. Then there's, of course, to recall from our discussion this morning, there's the mercy side. When Krishna sees us trying to offenselessly chant his holy name, to trying to serve the devotees in a genuine mood of humble service, Krishna is very pleased. And Krishna's mercy comes, and this mood of humility grows and grows and grows. And protects the devotee from offenses against the devotees and against the holy name. Similarly, by taking exclusive shelter in Krishna through the medium of the representatives of Krishna, particularly the teaching that Prabhupada gives hundreds of times in his Bhaktivedanta purport, the shelter of the spiritual master. Serving without reservation in this humble mood, with no other purpose than manifesting Lord Chaitanya's will or Krishna's will or the will of the spiritual master through that service, manifesting that will in this world. Like that's, you know, the meditation of whoever has great devotion, you know, to serve the deity in such a way that the devotees are so inspired. I've heard Ramabhadra describe this many times, and he describes when he's planning the outfits and planning the worship and executing the worship, when the curtain opens, people go, oh. It takes away their breath. How beautiful. And that's so the devotees are pleased, but serving the Lord so that he's pleased, or distributing books in the mood that this is the order of the spiritual master. Let the order of the spiritual master somehow or other be fulfilled. Or as I was sharing Adikarta's words about the fulfilling of the instruction that Prabhupada gave, that we should have rural communities. We're taking advantage of Gita Nagari by coming here sometimes for retreats. But the fulfilling of that instruction, if one can let that enter one's heart and take up that mission in a humble serving mood, it needs support and needs encouragement, but it takes devotees to do that. Whatever that service is, your duty as grihasthas to enter into marriage vows that actually fulfill what the purpose of marriage says according to scripture and actually do it. And raise children in such a way that they're protected and they're taken to Krishna as the duty of parents should be, to deliver them from birth and death, and actually do it. Manifest that message in this world. Take any instruction, like those, whatever the services that you have, and take them up in that way. That takes, we set aside our own ego conceptions, and just in that selfless, humble service mood, you connect with the internal potency, you connect with Krishna, and this descending mercy that we so much want. Scriptural examples are abundant. One that comes right at the top of the list is Narottam Das Thakur. Some of you may not know much about Narottam Das Thakur's life. He was the only son in a very wealthy, aristocratic, noble family. He would have been, had he continued in his material life, he would have inherited immense fortune and practically a kingdom, which he had no interest in at all. And instead, he wanted to go to Vrindavan and study the teachings of the Goswamis and the Jiva Goswami. And when he came to Vrindavan, he was so inspired by the purity and complete detachment and renunciation of Lokanath Das Thakur, that he requested Lokanath to accept him as a disciple. Lokanath said, "How could this be? You're the son of a king, and I'm this insignificant nobody. And you're used to noble life. How could this be? Besides that, I've taken a vow, I'll not accept any disciples. But there's Jiva Goswami, or Rupa Goswami, or Sanatana Goswami, so many qualified. Take shelter of them." But Narottam's heart was fixed on taking initiation from Lokanath, or at least serving him. And so he served him in such a way even Lokanath didn't know he was being served. It wasn't for getting recognition. "Hey, look at me, I'm doing some service." Every morning when Lokanath went to take his bath by the riverside, or in the riverside, he would answer the call of nature in a grove of trees and then take his bath. And after Lokanath left, with his own hand he would come and clean that place, so it would, day after day, wouldn't be messy, it would be clean. After some time, Lokanath realized, "Wait a minute, this is, there's no mess here, except what's going on. Somebody's removing this. Someone's trying to serve." So after completing his morning duties, he went and hid just to see what would happen. And sure enough, Narottam came and began cleaning. "Aha! What are you doing? Just some service? How can you do this? You're the son of a king and cleaning like a bungee. How, this is too painful. I can't allow this to go on. I just want to serve you. I just want your shelter. I want your mercy." Seeing the purity and simplicity and genuine sincerity of Narottam's qualities, he accepted him as a disciple, and no other disciple. He had only one disciple. But moved by this complete humble service, or in contrast to Ramchandra Puri, the other disciple or another disciple of Ishwarapuri, of Madhavendrapuri, was Ishwarapuri. Ishwarapuri. Ramchandrapuri was criticizing his spiritual master, Madhavendrapuri, for how he was conducting his devotion in an ecstatic mood. He didn't understand his ecstatic mood, so he began questioning in a challenging way. Madhavendrapuri said, "Leave my sight. I don't want to see you ever again. I hope I don't die seeing your face or I'll go to hell." But Ishwarapuri, instead, just took up this position of humble service. Much like Narottam, just in his invalid final stages of life, just caring for all the bodily necessities. Madhavendrapuri, very, very humble service. And in this way, Ishwarapuri got the full mercy of Madhavendrapuri. But he just wanted to serve him. This mood of humbly serving the great souls. Prataparudra, his humble service, sweeping the street before Lord Jagannath. Sanatan Goswami, when he was visiting in Jagannath Puri, because his body had weeping sores. Weeping means sores that were open and yucky stuff was coming out of his body. Yucky, smelly stuff. Because of water that he drank when passing through the Jarikand forest. And it infected his body with this disease. So one time where he was staying with Haridas Thakur, a messenger was sent to come. Lord Chaitanya would like to see you. So the path to go from where Haridas Thakur was to where Lord Chaitanya was to go past the Jagannath temple. But he didn't go past the Jagannath temple. He went out by the beach side in the hot sand in his bare feet in the midday sun. So his feet blistered, literally. And when he reached, Lord Chaitanya asked, "How come it took you so long?" He knew the answer because he didn't go by the temple route. He went by the beach side. "Why did you go by the beach side? It's so hot. Let me see your feet. Your feet are burned. How could you tolerate?" Nityananda Goswami's answer was, "There was nothing to tolerate. It was just coming to see you. But why did you come the other path? Because if any of the Brahmins happened to brush my body with all this yucky stuff coming out of my body, then it would have contaminated them and I would have made an offense to Lord Jagannath and to those Brahmins. So for me it was not an inconvenience to go by the beach side." So for one's own, just as these examples that Lord Chaitanya was giving, his own convenience was, or inconvenience was nothing. But feeling himself unfit to even pass by the outside of the temple. So both Rupa and Sanatan, like Haridas Thakur, were not entering the temple because they felt themselves unqualified due to their past service with Nawab Hussain Shah. This mood of humility permeates those who are actually elevated Vaishnavas. See it the other way around. If you see the absence of humility, if you see this gross display of pride, what is that? How is that fit for a saintly person? It's not a saintly person's behavior. But what are some of the other features that humility takes? If we want to develop humility, we're not Sanatan Goswami or Haridas Thakur or Narottam Das Thakur or Prataparudra Maharaj. We're just these little guys or ladies trying to cultivate Krishna consciousness, trying to cultivate humility. The instruction that Lord Chaitanya gives in Shikshastakam is feeling oneself just like we heard in the question this morning, embarrassed. Whoa. Good. Now, in that mood, one's heart should open for trying, wanting, reaching out for Lord Chaitanya's mercy to please pick me up. If we're thinking we're other than in a humble mood, see you later, Krishna. I'm doing fine. Haribol, how's it going? Or something, or just ignore. When Uddhava came to Vrindavan under Krishna's instruction to deliver a message to the gopis, it was to deliver the message to the gopis, but it was also to show Uddhava what is the exalted nature of the love of the residents of Vrindavan, and in particular, the gopis. So he became overwhelmed with appreciation of how elevated was their devotion. So he prayed that he would become a blade of grass. I mean, he wanted the dust from their lotus feet to place upon his head, just like this verse we read this morning. And he felt the gopis would be too embarrassed if I asked them for dust from their lotus feet or just took it. So rather than disturb them, let me just become a blade of grass, and as they're passing, they can step on me. Or maybe just some of the dust raised from their feet will go through the air and land on my grass body, and I'll be benedicted by the dust. When you visit, those of you that have done Govardhan Parikrama, many here have done, I'm sure, Govardhan Parikrama, and if not, you will. And once you do it, you want to do it again and again and again. So one of the places towards the end of Govardhan Parikrama is Uddhavakund. And on the right altar is a nice backdrop painting of, at least the Pujari is very happy to describe this lila, that after Krishna's departure, the residents of Dwarka were very eager to experience that place which they knew Krishna hankered so much to again return and experience, and that is Vrindavan. So they came to Vrindavan. And when they came to Vrindavan, there was a description of the pastimes of Krishna at Uddhava Kund. And in the course of those pastimes of Krishna, a spontaneous kirtan, just chanting, ecstatic chanting of Krishna's name, so with such absorption that from the blade of grass Uddhava appeared to experience that kirtan. Even the departed associates of Krishna and Krishna himself appeared. There are different versions of what happened. But from the ecstatic chanting of Krishna's holy name, it invokes this natural quality of devotion in a complete mood of humility. I'd like to end with, there's some nice prayers by Raghunath, many nice prayers by Raghunath Das Goswami, where he's, by his example, showing us what is the humility of a Vaishnava, of a Uttama Adhikari Vaishnava. So here's some prayers. There are 10 vows of Raghunath Das Goswami, where he says, I vow. Confirmed. I shall love my spiritual master. The Gayatri Mantra, the holy name of Lord Krishna, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's feet, Srila Sarup Damodar Goswami, Srila Rupa Goswami, his associates, his elder brother, Govardhan Hill, Radha Kund, Mathura City, Vrindavan Forest, the land of Braja, the devotees of Lord Krishna, and the residents of Braja. But then, having just described the glories of these places that he vows to love so much, all of those places minus Krishna is simply pain. Here's another set of prayers. Now I no longer have the sustainer of my life. This is Lord Chaitanya has left. In the absence of Lord Chaitanya, the land of Braja has become empty and desolate. Govardhan Hill has become like a great python. And Radha Kund has become like the gaping mouth of a ferocious tiger. I mean, this is his worshipable places, Govardhan Hill. Even when he was in Puri, and Mahaprabhu gave him Govardhan Shila, he understood, he is giving me residence at Govardhan. And when he came to Govardhan, he stayed at Radha Kund. But what's the meaning of Radha Kund or Govardhan or the land of Raja? Without his shelter of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, the other way around. When there's this dedication to the shelter of those who are our true shelters, this humility awakens in the heart. In that mood of service, humility awakens deeper and deeper. And in that humble state of mind, the pure holy name can enter. Then we can get a taste. This is the teaching of our Goswamis. This humility in service, the two terms or qualities, the humble mood of service, you were accustomed to hearing me speak, it's like a refrain. Humble mood of service. So service and the humble mood, they go together. They're inseparable. Service means humble, and humble means service. Humble before Krishna means service. And in that humble state, the message of the Vedas become revealed. In Krishna and the spiritual master, all the imports of the Vedas become revealed. This humble mood of service means reality with a capital R becomes manifest in your heart. The meaning of the scriptures becomes understandable, or becomes prakashante, becomes manifest. In Jiva Goswami's Bhakti Sandarbha, he says, messages like this, like the Shikshastakam is, it's like the theme in a book stitches together all the little subplots and characters and all the other parts of the story. The theme of the book. And so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings are compressed into these eight teachings. And the essence of them is this third verse, Shikshastakam, from which the meanings of all other things can be known, without which the meaning of all other things cannot be known.
We have the chance to get the holy name, but how are we going to get a taste of the holy name when we deeply into the holy name of Allah?
Krishna in the form of his holy name. Through this portal, through this opening, this instruction, our idea of humility is something not exactly what humility is. The real humility is not, it's not something you wear, it's not something external, it's something internal. And one feels, it's a feeling of humility in the way that one serves others. So, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, while he could write in Chaitanya Charitamrita very resounding statements where Lord Chaitanya would be speaking to Prakashananda Saraswati and smash his own, that's to protect the honor of Krishna. But as far as his own personal mood, he described himself as more sinful than Jagai and Madhai, and lower than the worm and stool. I remember very well that I was taking part in the Panchakarma treatment in Bombay, and I was going to the same clinic that Radhanath Maharaj was going to, and he was wasted. I mean, his health is not strong, and at that particular time it was really terrible. So it was one of those situations, those of you who have been to the Chaupati temple, where they have multiple speakers at the Sunday program quite often. So Jayadvaita Maharaj and I and Radhanath Swami were simultaneous there, and he was so sick, Radhanath Maharaj, that he couldn't. He said, "You two speak and I'll just lean against my pillow." But we spoke about this verse, Trinadapi Sunichena. So I spoke something, Jayadvaita Maharaj spoke something, and Radhanath Maharaj then decided he would speak something. He got inspired. He said, in short, it was, of course he tells wonderful, long stories, but the message was that he's undergoing Panchakarma, and that's why he's so weak, or it's part of why he's so weak, plus his health is bad. And when the doctor first took his pulse, he said, "You have a tapeworm." And he said, "I told the doctor, nah, I have a tapeworm. I'm very careful with my eating. My devotees here, they're very, very strict about what I eat, don't eat." He said, "Well, you'll see." So the treatment in part was to eliminate, you know what Panchakarma is. It's, you remove the toxins from your, loosen the toxins from the tissues of your body, and then through virechan, it's expelled by mass elimination. And sure enough, these, 3 foot long tapeworms, two or three of them came out. And he said, when that happened, I was thinking of this verse by Krishnadas Kaviraj, where, as he was looking at the tapeworm, he said, "It must have come when I passed through Middle East, because anyway, however he got them, they were part of what was making his body so emaciated so at that particular time, because everything he was eating, they were eating instead of his nourishing his body." But the Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami was feeling, not saying because it's poetically cute, but he was feeling himself so lowly that he was feeling himself literally lower than the worm and stool, more sinful than Jagai and Madhai. Now when you're feeling like that, if you don't have a spiritual conception of life, it's like finished, suicide or whatever. Massive depression. Go see a doctor to get some medication or something. But not a pure devotee. A pure devotee, because of spiritual shelter, is calling out. This humility brings us to the position where our own effort, which is, I want Krishna's shelter, but my own effort is not enough. I have no qualification. I'm shameless, Rupa Goswami writes. I have no qualification, and still I'm shamelessly begging, please give your mercy. This is the elevated position. So as we strive for that qualification and try to chant the holy name purely, that quality awakens. And then we can serve the devotee all the circumstances. Can say, or as Prabhupada would say, one remains undisturbed when there's no disturbance. That's not something wonderful. But when there is big disturbance and one remains undisturbed, that's something wonderful. This humility, the spiritual shelter. Chanting should be done in that way. Or we should strive like that. And the all-powerful holy name can lift us to that position. Then there's a real taste. Raga. Or rati. Real taste. So we have some time for some questions. Any questions? Okay. Any questions? Over here. Keep crying. No, please. Keep going. Don't stop. We're wasting time.
How do you deal with mental offenses?
How do you deal with?
Mental offenses.
Mental offenses. Don't make them. That's the best goal. Repent. If your mind goes to something that's offensive, remorse. Don't stay there. And if you have made a mental offense, you can know that at least as far as reaction is concerned, there's not reaction for mental offense, but acting upon an offensive thought will follow if you don't check the thought. Because the sequence goes thinking, feeling, willing, and you don't put on the brakes, and you're acting. Next thing you know, a very nice example from Chaitanya Leela is Mother Sachi. When her son, Vishwarup, left home to take sannyas, in her mind, she blamed Advaitacharya because he gives such nice Bhagavatam classes. My son would go and listen all the time. And then when we wanted to get him married, he left. They got it by the detachment that came from Advaitacharya's nice Krishna Katha. So she didn't say anything. She didn't act on it, but she felt it. She thought it and felt it. So then later when Lord Chaitanya had become elevated. She was in, she then spoke it. It came out. What's inside comes out. So if there's something inside, get rid of it. It's offensive in a thinking form. And one way to change that thinking form is you go serve that very devotee. Or you can disclose to that devotee. I've done that in the past. I've had this bad thought about you, not you, but someone, to some person, to a certain person. And I feel bad that I had this bad thought. Please forgive me. I've done that. And immediately, it's like that poison is gone. And the person's response is also very accepting. At least those were my experiences. Now, maybe something else in some other cases, but that was my experience. Cleanse the offensive thought. Not just, oh, it's okay because I didn't do it. I didn't say it. I didn't. Yes, Arthur.
In the past times of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers,
in the past times of Lord Chaitanya and his followers,
sometimes we see instances where the humility of these great devotees are, they seem to be causing pain to the Lord.
Humility of the devotee causes pain to the Lord, seems like.
Yeah, so it seems very mysterious. How do we understand?
How do we understand? How do we understand mysterious things? Is your question. They either remain a mystery or they become disclosed through those who are beyond mystery. Through our acharyas, they can explain such things. You have a specific example in mind, or just asking in a broad, general, mysterious way?
From my understanding, I have is devotee acts to please Krishna only, to give him pleasure.
Yeah, but the devotee, what pleases Krishna, just like Mother Yasoda binding Krishna. From our perspective, from an ordinary person's perspective, you don't chase after God with a stick in your hand. How is that pleasing him? Mother Yasoda, stop it. I mean, I used to watch Trivikram Swami and Sridhar Swami interact with one another, and the way that they were speaking to one another, I was thinking, and they both said, "You don't understand. We're just it's loving." There was no heart for him. No words stuck. And oh, he stung me with that harsh words. It was loving, because of the intimacy of their relationship. I can't even, it's like my mind blanked out what they said because it was so, but, so, what to speak of with Krishna? Or, you know, Jagatananda and Lord Chaitanya. Or others, you know, they would give Lord Chaitanya instruction. And Lord Chaitanya would smile and say, "No one can do this but you. You have such love for me." But not, you know, it's different with Ramchandrapur. It's mood of love. And in that mood of love, when it's genuine loving dealing, it's the service to the beloved. That's the essence of that loving exchange. Krishna Smarani, you want to add something?
I want to ask a different question.
Okay. Lohit, can we get the sound to work? Go ahead.
The kind of humility a devotee manifests depends on the service. For example, in Maharaj Parikshit's case,
depends on the person or the circumstance? Or both? Sure, absolutely. This is not a cookie cutter religion. We all have to do this one same thing and that's the formula. That's not the idea. But there's exhibitions of humility, like this, like that, variety. Variety of exhibitions of humility. Pretty mean. Any other questions? In the back. I see a hand in the back. We have a microphone that reaches the back.
Maharaj, it seems easy to be humble. We are devotees, at least pretend to be humble. We are devotees, but in your day-to-day life, when outside world humility may be considered as a lack of confidence or low self-esteem, how do you feel? How do you feel humble in that situation?
Common question. Your mood internally in the outside world should be the servant of the servant of the servant. Now, how you may serve someone in the outside world may be ABC or XYZ, but your mood should be, the form might be, just like, here's a, when Arjuna was asked by Krishna to fight, he accepted Krishna's instruction. In regard to Krishna's instruction, he submitted himself before Krishna's instruction. But fighting meant he had to be intense, to death. But that's an exhibition of the mood of service to Krishna. So the mood of service doesn't mean, humble mood of service doesn't mean go in a corner and tremble. Go in the kitchen where they're getting ready for the offering and it's, you know, it's got to go on the altar. It's time for Radha Damodar's offering. Or something. You know, it's, or Nandakishore when he was trying to get the Brahmacharya ashram ready, you know. Sometimes service has to be very intense. Circumstance may require that. In the workplace, it may require. But it may require silence also. Sometimes, you know, so whatever is appropriate, the mood should be in the mood of service. Okay? Is that all right? Okay. Someone else? Yes? Ramya. Well, here comes the microphone flying through the air.
My question is kind of related to the class, the morning class.
Okay.
So can I ask?
Fine.
Okay. Well, based on what I understood, we shouldn't expect anything from others, like respect. So, what do we do if we're like in a situation like we're helping someone and like we give advice, we take the time to do everything, and then
we give advice or they give advice?
We.
Okay. You're doing something,
yeah.
You're giving some advice.
And you like take the time and do everything. But then they turn their back on you, they don't like do it, they just like they're against what you turn against.
Not only they ignore, but they
They
do one of those other things like
Okay. Yeah.
One of those?
So, I mean, like, how do you tolerate, or like, how do you act? Like, for me, when I, something happens to me like that, my immediate reaction is, you know, like, turn them down, but,
put them down. They deserve it because you're right. You're humble and they didn't get it. You don't know how humble I am. I'll show you. Well, one of the things that happens in moments is we get lost in the moment, we lose the big picture. The big picture is we're trying to become pure and we're trying to accomplish some service for Krishna. But the service for Krishna is the immediate thing, and the bigger thing is the service for Krishna is to become Krishna's pure devotee. So in this circumstance, let me step out of the immediate circumstance, and how can I be Krishna's, become Krishna's pure devotee? Or ask yourself the question, if Guru Maharaj was in this situation, what would he do? Because I asked that, you know, if Prabhupada was in this situation, or Prabhupada was right by my side, what would he want me to do? What advice would he give me in this circumstance? And even just going to that place of consciousness, there you're going to find not only tolerance, but you're going to find transcendence. What's important is not the immediate situation, but the purity of our Krishna consciousness. Then, once you're in that space, purity of Krishna consciousness is important. Now this knucklehead's still not getting it. So then you have to have some practical plan of action. But your practical plan of action is going to be moved by a humble mood of service. That's what I'm trying to do. And when I don't try to do that, even if it comes out right, it still doesn't feel right. There's that pinch that says, Krishna's not being pleased. Even if it came out right, it wasn't pure. I want my heart to be pure. That's what I want. That's how one should feel in a circumstance like you described. Secondary is the outcome, the immediate circumstance outcome. Primary is the purity of heart. If my Guru Maharaj was sitting right next to me, what's going to make him smile? How would I do this? That's how to think. Okay. Okay.
Maharaj, I want to know.
You want to get your voice back too, don't you?
Yeah.
No kirtan for you tonight. All right. Dancing at least.
I want to know how everyone just understand the different faces of humility, because we want to associate with the body who's exhibiting some of these qualities. But sometimes the face of humility may not look like humility as we were conceiving it online.
That's because, like Krishna Smarna's question, we may have a stereotype cookie cutter idea of humility's got to look like this or it's not humility. So we have to get beyond the cosmetic into the essence. Not the ribbon bow and the packaging, but what's the essence? Is the heart truly humble? So that, you know, all of these things, this kind of subtle question, there's no formula other than purity.
and, you know, and how do we access that purity? Where the whole, this is what we're describing. This whole Shikshastakam 3 is about that. Okay. Last question. Whoops. Okay.
This the kind of unity like which Sanatana Goswami or Krishna Kaviraj is explaining, that's very high.
Yes.
So at our level, when we chant nicely, what sort of unity will appear?
Well, just like this question, you know, check in with. You know, it's universal to say, what are Prabhupada's instructions, how we should behave, and am I in harmony with that mood and the instruction that Prabhupada gave, or my spiritual master, or the two teachings of the scripture? It's a little space called not reactive, but reflective. And in that reflective space, one enters a space where you check in with Krishna. Check in with Guru and Krishna. I'm your servant. Here's the circumstance before me. How would you like me to conduct myself? The mood of service is ruling. And the instructions of Guru and Krishna can carry you into that arena of response. In the mood of service. So passion is react. Don't think, just quickly react. Impulsively react, respond. So detach yourself from that passion mode by the mode of goodness. Reflecting on the spiritual connection that you have with Krishna through the instructions of the scriptures and the spiritual master, our Prabhupada's books. Go there in the mood of service. How do I carry this out?
And then, when one sees one's success, one is immediately happy, and that would be like pride.
Well, the happiness, like I was sharing with you all this morning, the happiness of kirtan, like we're going to chant shortly, the happiness of kirtan is contact with the holy name, but like here in the temple before Sri Sri Radha Damodar, we should know it's the happiness of Radha Damodar that we're feeling also. They're happy to have so many devotees of the Lord come and chant before them. That's not selfish. That's their happiness. Their happiness is our happiness. Shishidana Damodar ki.